Hello and welcome to Simply Save Podcast. International equities, especially US equities, have gained popularity among Indian investors. Domestic mutual funds have been launching a number of schemes that offer Indian investors exposure to global equities or are enabling their existing schemes to invest in international equities. Traditionally, Indian investors have had strong home bias and are only recently opening up to the idea of geographical diversification. But can the strategy really help investors in terms of both controlling equity investment related risks and improving the equity returns? Can allocation or diversifying to US equities really make a difference to your equity portfolio? In this podcast, I'm joined by Tim Edwards, who is the Managing Director of Index Investment Strategy at S&P Dow Jones Indices, who shares his views on importance of taking exposure to global equities and backs his arguments with strong historical data. He talks about his recently published research, which shows how a blended portfolio of US and Indian benchmark indices has outperformed the returns given by the two indices, that is S&P 500 and S&P BSE Sensex, separately. The blended portfolio has also shown a sharp reduction in volatility.
Welcome, Tim, to our Simply Save podcast. Tim, you may not be aware, but in India, there has been a lot of interest about international equities, about US equities. There is a lot of fund houses have also come out with new funds that give them either US equity flavor or maybe Asia equity flavor. So, since you have done quite a bit of work in this space, we thought we should connect with you and get your views on this. So, firstly, we would like to understand what is the real case for global equity diversification.
First, let me start by saying thank you very much for inviting me onto your show. I'm delighted to be coming and talking about this. We did some research this year, which it was a bit of a coincidence, actually. We'd meant for some time to put together a bit of analysis, a bit of research, just looking at the case for global equity diversification from an Indian perspective. And the wheels had started rolling on that. And then this year, well, we've had an extraordinary time in the markets. And part of that has led to the outperformance of a few segments, sectors, countries that are or have historically been somewhat underrepresented in India. So I think it makes it a really interesting time to be talking about international diversification. I'll answer your question in two ways. First of all, just take the really big picture sense. You know, for any investor anywhere in the world, what should you think about in terms of investing domestically and at home? And then I'll narrow it down a little bit more specifically to the Indian case. So just taking super big picture, there are over 10,000 companies in the world. There's something between, depends how you measure it, between $80 and $100 trillion of equity capital that really is the opportunity set for all investors. And I think, I would almost turn it on its head and say, if you start from basic principles, it's almost why not, right? So you have some stocks which are available to you in part because they're your home market. You might know them a little bit better. But why would you choose to ignore the whole rest of the world? Perhaps you need a reason to doing so. So, I almost flip it on its head. But the real kind of idea, the core of it, is that each market has its own strengths and weaknesses. Now, some of those are related to the particular state of the local economy or the natural resources or the industrial powerhouses that you have. Over decades, over long cycles, those industries and those countries will sometimes do better and sometimes do worse. And the real basic case for international investing is actually one of diversification. It is about making sure that if you're, for example, in a country that doesn't have a strong tech sector, well, there are other countries that do have strong tech sectors, and maybe having an allocation to technology is going to be important in times when tech is the best performing sector. On the flip side, you might be in a country that has almost no energy. The energy sector is one that's been doing very poorly recently, but at other times it's been doing much better. So the super basic case is really one about participation and diversification. Sometimes different parts, different countries, different market segments are going to do better. And in many ways, the role of an equity investor is to assess the landscape of opportunities and look for participation in growth. So that's the kind of, you know, really, really basic global perspective. If we narrow it down a little bit to more and just look at India in particular. So India is not completely unusual in this, but India has a very, very strong home bias. And home bias is just a term for propensity for investors to invest, you know, mainly domestically. Now, there's a range of reasons for that. Some of it is to do with historic regulations and capital controls that made it a little bit more difficult or tax inefficient to invest abroad. Some of it is down to it's almost an economic nationalism. I've spoken to quite a few people in the region over the years, and you know what you find is a really strong belief that not only has India shown world-beating economic growth, but it's incredibly well-placed to continue to do so. And on that basis, you know, why would I invest anywhere else? India is the best market for me. And in some sense, that's a very, very valid opinion. I just want to stress, you know, that is a bet on India. There's a lot of market that you're then ignoring. So historically, traditionally, India's had a very, very strong home bias. And actually, one of the starting points for my research was an academic paper, which had done some analysis that suggested that Indian home bias was the strongest of almost any country in the world, certainly any major economy. You see the same if you look at assets in mutual funds. So kind of that's the why, but if you drill down into India and say, well, you know, was that a great idea? Could that, you know, were there missed opportunities? And I'd say actually for a lot of this century, the answer was no. So in fact, in the 15 years between, and this is, you know, I get to pick the dates very carefully, but in the 15 years between 2003 and 2018, India was the best among the 40 largest stock markets in the world in terms of performance. So you really weren't punished. Now that has changed a little bit recently, and the reasons why it changed really illustrate the potential power of diversification to Indian investors. So what you have in the Indian market is an equity market that does have biases. The financial sector, the industrial sector, the material sector are all quite large.
Correct.
And when those sectors do badly, you'll often see the Indian market not doing so well. The past couple of years, those sectors have not done very well, particularly in comparison to sectors like healthcare, communication services, information technology. And even to, you know, on a single stock perspective, this year and in the past couple of years, what we've seen is some real dominance from some very large names. I'm thinking of, you know, those names at the top of the market, Apple, Microsoft, Amazon, Google, Alphabet as the stock is, Facebook, Alibaba, right? Those companies are unique and they have driven up the global stock markets in a way that Indian investors just didn't have an equivalent at home that was delivering either the capacity for investment or you know, just kind of replicating those kinds of patterns of returns.
Okay.
So, you know, in the general case and in India in particular, the first argument for global diversification, I think, is yes, one of diversification, but also just one of participation. There is a market out there that is offering you opportunities.
And what does data on long-term returns, show? I mean, when we say look at 10 years returns, can you tell us, you know, how domestic-oriented Indian portfolio would have done vis-a-vis S&P plus Sensex blended portfolio?
Yeah, so one of the fortunate things, I mean, I mentioned earlier, you know, the strength and dominance of countries and industries is not really something that happens day to day, week to week. This runs over super long-term cycles. And the advantage is with the Indian market, you actually have in the S&P BSE Sensex, you have an index that represents the Indian market and has over, nearly 40 years of history. And that's great because that you can essentially then model with the US S&P 500, which goes back even longer. You can model different allocations and you can look at the sort of hypothetical impact. How much difference would it have made to me if I had invested in a blend of the Sensex and the S&P 500? And I'll give you the highlights. If anyone would like to read more into this, I'll do a shameless piece of promotion for our paper. It's called From Zero to Hero, The Indian Case for Global Equity Diversification. And one of the things we do in that paper is to look at a long-term combination of the S&P 500 and the Sensex. And what you see there is it's almost a textbook example of the potential advantages of diversification. So what do you really want to see? One, reduction in risk, right? And you really see that. And the times when India was underperforming, the US was often outperforming. The combination gives you a much smoother ride. Just to put, you know, a kind of number on that in terms of annualized volatility over the full time period, you're looking at a reduction of about 10% in volatility, going from, you know, on an average of sort of, you know, close to 20-25 down to something between 10 and 15. So huge improvement in risk, but even better, no sacrifice in return. And in fact, the combination over the full period of Indian and US equities actually outperformed the US and outperformed India. Okay. I mean, this really could be a textbook study of the potential advantages of diversification. And from an investor's perspective, you know, the real value comes in, I think, it is often very hard staying invested in the equity markets. A feature of equity markets everywhere is that from time to time, they go down very fast and very steeply. And this is, you know, it is a natural human instinct to think at that point, I can't take any more of this pain. I want to get it. I want to go to cash. Right. If you can build an equity investment where that drawdown is more limited, because part of the portfolio is doing, one part of the portfolio is doing better than the other, that allows you to stay the course. And that actually allows you to stay invested. And to act against our instincts, which typically, if we follow our instincts, is to sell at the bottom. I'd really encourage people to have a look. There's more granular data on that. But over 10 years, over 20 years, over 30 years, the Indian and US markets have really attractive characteristics in terms of their combination, having that mix of you know, one performing well at one time, one performing well at the other. And so it is a very attractive hypothetical kind of combination. I'll just add to that, just before we move on. You know, why pick the US, right? You know, why are we not talking about the combination of India and Germany or India and Japan? And let me tell you, it's not just because the US market is well performing. There is the challenge when investing internationally that there's a lot of countries out there. Some of them are easy to get to, some of them are harder to get to in terms of the frictions of capital investment. The US is the largest equity market in the world. In fact, of the total world market, the US equity accounts for over half. Right. So with just one market, the US market, you actually capture a very large proportion of the global opportunity set. That combined with, as we've already mentioned, the long history, makes it a great place to start from analysis and potentially a great place to start from an investment perspective.
Right. And just the study that you have done, it's for what period? The study that you just cited?
It's for a historical period. Okay. We ran it up until September of the third, end of the third quarter of 2020. With the S&P 500 and the Sensex, you actually have a history going back to 1979 that you can use for analysis.
Okay.
We ran the full period.
The full period. Okay. Right. So one thing you pointed out that US markets is an attractive diversifier because it's such a large market. Are there any other reason that you feel that, you know, Indians should look at US markets? Is it something to do with the history of the markets or any other factors that make you think US markets make more sense?
Yeah, there are actually a few different reasons. The first one we've kind of already covered, right? If you're talking about the global opportunity set, you're talking about those, you know, super large, super high quality companies that have been leading world equities for the last 5 years. And many of them are American. right? I mean, we sort of went through the names earlier, but the world's top five largest stocks are essentially, they're in the S&P 500.
Right.
So, and just to give you a sense of scale, so the Sensex itself has 30 companies altogether, market capitalization in US dollars of around 0.7 trillion. Right. Many of those companies, Apple, Microsoft, Amazon, Alphabet, Facebook, those companies alone are the whole size of the Indian market.
Right.
That's the scale of the opportunity that you're essentially missing out on if you ignore them.
Right.
So that's the first, just the scale of the opportunity. The second one is something I've touched on already, and it's about that mix of industries and segments. So the US has a reasonably high concentration in healthcare, in information technology, in communication services. In other words, precisely those parts of or those segments of the industry that I'd mentioned earlier, India was a little bit lacking on.
Right.
So it's that complementary nature. And in fact, you know, I suspect if you look at the history of the two markets, they do have an attractive correlation profile. Some of that is coming from the fact that they have different industry and sector exposures, right? So it's that combination that is you know, aiding the process of diversification.
Sure.
So scale of opportunity, complementary exposures. And then the final piece of the puzzle is a little bit more subtle, but it's to do with ease and transparency.
Okay.
So in many cases, investing internationally can be an expensive and challenging process. For example, appointing a manager who can invest well internationally, you know, it's not necessarily following the same rules or the same skill set as someone you might invest with domestically.
Right.
In the case of the US market, there are, for Indian investors and for many other investors worldwide, there is another option, and that's the option of a passive index tracker, right? So just right. following the S&P 500 or something like that. Now, for the US market, there are a couple of things that make this particularly powerful. The first is that actually this is our data that we've done the research on this over nearly 20 years now. Very few stock pickers have managed to actually beat the S&P 500. And that's not, you know, to say anything about those funds. My real point here is that when you go to US equities, the option of a cheap, and they are typically much cheaper, cheap, simple, transparent index tracker with the evidence to support that that's actually a viable way of investing in that market, really, when you add it together with those other two points about the scale of opportunity and the complementary exposures, means that for many investors, the US can be a very sensible first step in terms of accessing international markets in a cheap and transparent way.
Right. And also the fact that I think US has that history of capitalism and has always had that tradition of shareholder friendly decisions and corporate governance, is that must also be one of the reasons, right? Because other economies may not have those similar standards being followed.
I mean that's a much broader topic. Right. You could do a whole podcast on that, the
right.
sort of American right. exceptionalism, but it's absolutely true.
Right.
You know, the model of a modern stock market, you know, may have been invented 400 years ago in Holland. Kind of took over a little bit in the 17th, 18th century. It was the UK and Holland, but pretty much since the turn of the 19th century, by far, you know, corporate, capitalist, equity market strength and a country that fosters innovation and fosters entrepreneurial growth. In that the US does have an extraordinary record and, you know, is one that many people see likely as to continue long into the future.
Tim, I also wanted to ask you, when it comes to, you know, allocation in one's portfolio, you know, how should Indian investors allocate to international equities? What part or what percentage of their portfolio should have exposure?
Yeah, I mean, I think. Unfortunately, I'm going to give you the answer you're expecting, which, you know, it depends. It clearly depends. But what I will say, so couple of things. The first, international investing, international equity investing, it is going to give an additional risk. It is going to give currency exposures, which, by the way, can be a very good thing. But it is going to, there's an extra level of somewhat of complication there. So it's not always going to be right for everyone. What we did in our research, rather than what's the optimal amount, what's the right amount? Because I think in practice, many Indian investors will be starting from a zero allocation. Correct. And whatever the analytics say, the analytics might say the optimal allocation is 50%. No one's going to put 50%, right? It's just not right to move from zero to half of your money. What we did was actually look at the power of the impact to make a small allocation to international equities. And we compared that to a few different things you might do. So for example, you might move, a certain percentage of your portfolio, small percentage from equities to bonds, or you might take some money out of an underperforming fund and put it in a outperforming fund. And so those were the comparisons that we looked at. And what we found was that actually a decision to allocate even quite a small proportion of your portfolio to international equities could be as powerful in terms of risk improvement as moving from equities to bonds, and could be as powerful in terms of return improvement as, in fact, several times more powerful, five times more powerful than moving from an underperforming fund to an outperforming fund. So it has the power, even at a sort of small allocation, to be a very, very impactful and meaningful decision. In terms of what the right allocation is, I'll sort of come back to it. If you look at the historical evidence, whatever that number is, it's quite very possibly not 0%.
Right. Thanks, Tim, for your time, for sharing your incisive and very valuable insights to our listeners. We hope our listeners can learn and pick up from whatever you have shared on this show. Thank you so much, Tim.
Thank you very much for having me.
That's all the time we have for today's podcast. Thank you, Tim, for sharing your views, and thank you, listeners, for tuning in. We hope you found this conversation interesting and it helped in changing your perspective about international equities. Keep listening to Simply Save. If you have any feedback or questions, do write to us at mcpodcast@nw18.com. For more news, views, and updates, log on to moneycontrol.com.